And so we were wondering if this afternoon questions might come up about taking the practice home, and they didn't. And so we wanted to give some opportunity for that topic at this point before we have manager's announcements. And so we'll each say a few words about that and then open it for some questions. And there's also a little bit of an opportunity for further questions about this, perhaps in the morning closing circle. I would say one of the things I love most about this practice is that the instructions on retreat are no different than the instructions in daily life. It's just so simple. As we're going through our day, are we aware? What are we aware of? Checking our relationship from time to time. That's it. What can I take home? Are you aware? What am I aware of? What's my relationship to what I'm experiencing? I sometimes say that, in daily life, the objects are... Well, I say the objects are different, but they're no different, really. I mean, as Joseph Goldstein points out, only six things happen: seeing, smelling, hearing, tasting, touching, and things in the mind. And yet, the experience in daily life is that perhaps there's more of a need to think, to plan, to do, to be engaged in activity, in conversation, driving. I mean, has anybody been driving this week? I hope not. So, there are some different activities, perhaps, that we engage in daily life. And so, again, as we've been saying, the mindfulness gets comfortable and gets familiar with various experiences. And so on this retreat, mindfulness has had a chance to get comfortable and get familiar with sitting in the hall and walking out on these paths. And still the mind wanders. It's had a chance to get a little bit comfortable with working in your yogi jobs and, practicing coming back to awareness in the kitchen and in cleaning a toilet or whatever. And still the mind wanders. And so even though we've been practicing with these activities, we see that the mind still slips out, even though we've had the repetition of working day to day with these, practicing with mindfulness in these areas. And so when we go home, as I said earlier, it's like this is the advanced retreat. It's hard. It's really hard in daily life. And it's really hard in the area of speech to maintain continuity of mindfulness. It's hard to remember, really hard to remember when in conversation, when engaged in discussions with friends or work partners. It's just hard to remember. And the thing that I would really encourage is that kind of attitude of, oh, missed that time. What I said yesterday, or it's like, oh, just missed that one. There's another opportunity. And just keep the intention going, kind of setting the intention to just try to wake up, try to remember when we wake up, try to recognize those moments of mindfulness remembering, moments of mindfulness arising. I think I said in the talk last night, if I didn't, I want to say it now, that one of my most basic daily life practices is just noticing that moment of remembering. Just noticing when mindfulness returns. And not trying to hold on to it, not trying to, do the mindfulness, but just cultivating that very light moment of effortless mindfulness, recognizing it. It's a great moment. It's a very powerful moment. And cultivating the ability to recognize it in daily life will bear great fruit. And so, you might set the intention to try to do that. Maybe have something that reminds you to try to do that. A note on your bathroom mirror, for instance. You know, you're brushing your teeth in the morning. Put it in front of your face so that you have to read it. Although, you know, if you leave it there for too long, you'll just start like looking around it. We attune to those things, and so you kind of have to keep moving them around. But put some kind of a reminder up there, like try to remember the moments of waking up. Just give yourself that and connect with that intention. And then at the end of the day, when you're back in front of the mirror, you will have another reminder that gives you a little bit of a check-in. Did I remember that at all today? Maybe not. Don't give up at that point. You know, don't take the note off the mirror and say, well, obviously this doesn't work. Just say, well, didn't work today. Let's try again. Let's just keep trying. I find the power of that commitment and that this is what I'm going to try to do, just to keep reminding yourself, this is important. I value this. I'm going to keep trying. The power of that intention and that resolve, basically, it's kind of like a resolve. I'm just going to keep trying, will bear fruit at some point. And some point you'll be opening your car door or walking across the street, and suddenly there's this moment of mindfulness, and it's just like, it's like nothing's changed, but everything changes in that moment. The recognition that you're aware. And again, there's not much to do there. You know, it's just like, awake. What's obvious? See if you can get a sense of that quality of being aware, and go on with your day. Just carry on. Keep exploring. I generally, you know, don't suggest so much in daily life practice. I mean, so many times people tell me they don't have time to be mindful in daily life. And that usually means that they're trying to do the mindfulness. They're trying to add it as an activity to their day. And that practice of just recognizing the light touch, the moment of mindfulness returning, that's effortless. It doesn't take a lot of energy to do that. Now, trying to sustain mindfulness is effort. And yet what I've seen, benefits I've seen of people just simply trying to recognize that moment of waking up over the course of a week, I actually have taught this style of practice in non-residential form, a weekend non-residential retreat, and then morning and evening checking in with people, how's it going, and really encourage this light touch. Well, the form of the retreat, of checking in morning and evening, helps to inspire that commitment to remembering, and just that light touch, it's just people begin to recognize it doesn't have to feel like it's a burden to bring this practice into our daily lives. And then we start seeing the value of it. And with seeing the value of it, there's even more impetus. It's like as we start to see the benefit of being mindful in our daily lives, and the benefits are enormous, not only for ourselves, but for the world. And I do really feel that this practice that we're doing here, it's not about simply learning about my own suffering. Because what happens as we learn about how our own minds work is that we essentially learn about how human minds work. And there's a huge amount of kind of, We recognize that, yeah, this process of grasping on, wanting to get rid of when things are unpleasant, we just see, wow, this is just how human minds work. And there's a sense of compassion, not only for ourselves, but for, you know, the suffering in the world. And so the practice that we do here ripples out and does benefit other beings. It's so important what you're choosing to do with your time. I'm so grateful that you are here and committed to learning this practice, and I hope that you will be interested in seeing what it might mean to carry it into life. When I first met this practice in Burma, when I went to practice with Sayadaw Utejaniya, I was there for 6.5 weeks that first time in his monastery. And about 2 weeks into it, I was thinking, this practice is a little wimpy. It's a little too laid back. I don't think insight's going to happen with this style of practice. It's just too easy, basically. What? Am I aware? What am I aware of? It's too laid back. And yet what I've seen, and I think some of you have also seen this here this week, the power of the momentum of mindfulness, as the momentum of mindfulness develops, what we can see and how it can transform us. But I have seen with this practice, going back and forth between retreat and daily life practice, that there's a kind of this gradual deepening of the practice, the capacity to be mindful much of the time, and the insights that come, the recognitions, the understanding about how the mind is struggling and freeing from that, it just gets more and more amazing. Right in daily life, the insights aren't confined to being on retreat. It's a slow settle, you know, it's a gradual momentum that builds. We get a little bit of a taste of a little bit more momentum when we come on retreat, but committing ourselves to working with this style of practice over the course of years, and I've been working with it since 2006, I think, so 10 years I've been working with this practice, the momentum that comes, that grows, It doesn't stop when you come off retreat. It's just this very powerful momentum of mindfulness that is very stable and very natural. So that it's not a lot of effort. You know, it does take that personal effort to get it going, but you know, it's such a simple practice. It's deceptive in its simplicity, in terms of its power to wake up our minds. So, your turn. And actually, I think we can go until 7:30, and then announcement 7:30 to 7:45. That should be okay.
Yeah, I think Andrea covered a lot of really wonderful points about bringing this practice, and this practice really is the practice of the Dharma home. Sometimes when I think about what the Dhamma, by the way, Dharma is more the Sanskrit form and Dhamma is the Pali term, and I go back and forth all the time, so you're not mishearing me, it's just I sort of like to say it both ways, Dhamma and Dharma. That the Dhamma, increasingly, it's like it is a way of living. It's not something that we do, it's a way of living. It's almost a lifestyle. Do we live knowing our mind and heart? Do we live awake to our experience? You know, it's so easy to think of the Dhamma as a practice that we kind of go off and do, and then we go back to our life. And it's really important to see that this is life. Being on retreat, it's life. It's mind and body, sense doors operating. We're training ourselves, training the mind to develop these skills, to live this way. And when we, I think, are interested in this practice, and we know its benefit, we can kind of trust that we're going to do this for the rest of our lives. And it's just getting more and more accustomed to developing the ability to be awake and mindful in all the various conditions that we find ourselves. You know, and sometimes when I would ask Saito, well, how do I be mindful when I'm talking, or how do I be mindful when I'm on the computer? And you just say, practice it. Try it out, practice. See if you can do that. That's all. we just need to practice.
And I'd say it's always possible. I mean,
yeah.
It's not easy, but again, you know, yes, our minds get lost, but whatever activity we choose to do, it's possible to be mindful. So, you know, not like collapsing just because we can't do it the first or second or third or tenth time, but just, oh, how is it possible? What am I missing? What, you know, how is it possible? It is possible. It's possible.
Yeah, and not to underestimate a moment of mindfulness in an activity that we're not accustomed to be mindful in. And I think I was sharing this with the group. The first time I actually started being mindful in the middle of an argument with my partner, oh, that's radical. Well, I can be, one part of my mind can be arguing, and the other part of my mind can be mindful and sort of say, oh my God, you're arguing and this is foolish, and cut it out. And the arguing mind kind of keeps going. It's like, yeah, not yet. Wait, I've got to prove my point. And the wisdom saying, yeah, but it's, you know, it's foolish. And, you know, and then the defilement saying, yeah, but if I give up now, then it'll be obvious, you know, what you've been doing. You gotta keep going. So the mindfulness, you know, starts to come into these kinds of activities. And not to be afraid, you know, what we see. So can we just be with what's happening? And I kind of have that spirit of that play a bit. I have confidence in all of us. You know, the more I've really tried to live this practice, it just gets better. It builds. The snowball grows. You know, it's accumulating momentum, and it really does start to take care of ourselves. It's there. These qualities start to be infused with how we do things, and if we just have confidence, if we put enough. Take care of our practice enough that these qualities will be with us up to our last breath and be right there. So, one thing that I know I've shared at closing retreats before that people have said was helpful, that there was a period in my practice that had a lot of momentum and I was so interested in the Dharma, and then I left that container, the monastery, the retreats, and it stayed as a highest priority in my mind, in importance, in theory, and in practice, I wasn't actually awake in the moment. I wasn't checking to really keep developing the mind, the mindfulness. And it was, even though if someone were to ask me what's, you know, most important to you, I would have said in this moment, oh yeah, I'm, you know, truth and knowing and mindfulness. But if I were to check the qualities in the mind, I wasn't actually being mindful and, you know, continuing the process of developing the mind. And when I really started to see that mismatch of how it was important, but I wasn't actually in that moment doing it, what was I actually doing? The mind was dispersed, it was scattered, it wasn't paying attention. And more the theory and, you know, the actual were becoming in mind, and it just needed a certain amount of suffering to finally convince myself that I should maybe get the practice mind, you know, to be there and actually be awake, notice the clinging, notice what's happening, you know. If we really do know our minds, we can take care of ourselves. So, any questions? Yes.
Question on what you just brought up. Mm-hmm. Meditation time have anything to do with that, or is it, you know, I guess
Yeah, so was it the meditation time falling away? And so when sometimes when we say meditation time, it's helpful to just even say formal meditation time. So we really do think of meditation as being the way that we can live in our life. And yeah, if we let go of formal periods of practice, or checking in even when we're not doing anything, when we're alone in the car, driving, or in an elevator, those periods when we're not doing anything, in the bathroom. You know, these little pockets can be such a support. And if we let, you know, even those periods when we have the chance to really check in, fall away, then... And the thing is, I would just say, from my practice at that time, the momentum was enough that I had confidence that there was momentum. But I didn't have enough momentum that it didn't need any checking. And I just saw that around certain aspects of my life that I was beginning to cling to and not continue the clarity of knowing what was happening. It was a setup at some point for the suffering that would follow from the way life changes. So it's these formal periods of practice can be very helpful. And one thing that Sayadaw has often said, that people that have been practicing for decades, you know, and they still see the same habits of mind, they can, you know, they'll report, you know, I do the practice 1 hour in the morning, 1 hour in the evening. I've been doing this for so many, many years. Why is the mind, these certain habits are still there? And he says, okay, so let's do the math. That's 2 hours of the day. You're watching your mind. Let's say you sleep for 8 hours, okay, so that's 10 hours. It's 24 hours in the day, so that's 14 hours of the day that you're letting all the habits of mind completely have their way, which they're going to have a lot more time to develop, you know, their strength and get, you know, they'll be there, so. So that's, it's very important to just think of what are we doing with our mind. Whatever we're doing with the mind will be cultivating the tendency for that to continue happening. So we have to see the practice of meditation is developing the ability over time that this integrates into our ongoing moments. I always have an and formal periods of practice are very helpful. As Andrea was saying, retreat time, even if it, and sometimes sitting, I don't want to sit. What about, I'll tell myself, what about 2 minutes? I have 2 minutes, and I sit down for 2 minutes. And the benefit comes quickly enough that those 2 minutes very easily grow into more. But if I tell myself I have to sit for 45 minutes or a half hour, very easy to avoid practice because it becomes a burden and a chore. Just do a minute, you know, 30 seconds. What's the hardest place to be mindful of? Where is it really hard for you?
Talking.
Yeah.
Computer.
One thing that with talking, I mentioned this in one of the groups, that with talking and listening, you know, you're in dynamic, active conversation. You know, that is a very hard time to be mindful with that kind of, oh, can I get my point across, and what are they saying, and how do I want to respond, and you know, so there's all of that going on. So it's helpful to find ways in which to practice the taking in what somebody else is saying and being available, present for ourselves simultaneously. I mean, this is part of the challenge of doing talking meditation or talking with people and being mindful, that, you know, it's hard to pay attention to what somebody else is saying and be present for ourselves at the same time. You know, it's a skill, and it's a skill that we can learn, but it's not easy sometimes. And so one thing I sometimes suggest is that if you practice mindfulness while reading, and you can slow it down, you know, with reading, you can take in a sentence and then check in. And how did that sentence impact me? You know, try this reading the newspaper. You'll get some strong reactions, right? Okay, read a sentence. How did that land? You know, basically when you're reading, you're taking in the content of somebody else's mind, like you are when you're listening. And so cultivating that skill, be mindful when you're reading. And you can stop. It's like, okay, read a sentence or two. How did that land? Read a sentence or two. How did that land? And then play with seeing if it's possible to read that sentence while you are simultaneously feeling how it is. It's possible to broaden the attention to include both taking in the content and knowing how you are in relationship to it. So you can practice that by yourself. Then likewise with talking, writing a message, writing an email, writing a text, playing with constructing that content in your own mind and becoming aware of how does it feel, how might it impact the other person who's hearing it. And again, you can type in a sentence, think about that sentence, reflect on it as it might impact somebody else, slowing it down. So if you can play with that, learning how to, you know, think, process, create something that you want to have communicated to somebody while you are feeling into how it is for you to do that. That's a skill. That's the beginning of the skill of learning how to be mindful while talking. Again, broadening the attention so that there can both, like Alexis was talking about, you know, being aware of that stream of argument and at the same time being aware of it. You know, we can be aware of the content of our thoughts and know how it impacts us and be aware of how it might impact somebody else. There's a lot of capacity our minds have for knowing many things at the same time. And then in terms of a talking, find somebody to practice with. Go out for a mindful lunch date and support each other in that practice. Support each other. Often when you practice mindful speaking, it's helpful to slow it down, to pause a little bit more. And in a normal conversation with somebody who doesn't know you're doing this, it can feel a little bit odd. Okay, I'm now aware. So practice with somebody who knows what you're doing and is interested in doing the same thing. And those skills will get stronger and it will become more natural. I remember the first time it was like the naturalness of mindfulness. I was practicing at Shui Yu Min where we do talk, you know, at the monastery. We do talk and there's like afternoon tea hour, afternoon social hour. It's like a cocktail party. It's just incredible. You know, they serve this juice and everybody stands around in little clumps of three. It's just like a cocktail party. And every time I didn't go a lot because I preferred to not be, I'm not a party person. So I didn't go quite a bit, but then I realized, okay, I need to practice this. I need to play with practicing this. And I went and no mindfulness. Went back to my room, was like, wow, that didn't work. Okay, well, let's try again. And so, you know, the next day, each day, I mean, every day at 4 o'clock, we had this opportunity, this cocktail party. So every day I'd give it a shot. And then one day, I was talking to somebody. I could tell, actually, that this person was very mindful while they were speaking. And it had the effect of drawing it out of me. And it was just a normal conversation about random things. It was in a normal flow of, you know, like, where are you from? And, you know, how long have you been here? And, you know, just kind of get to know you conversation. And yet he was very present and that spurted in me. And it was just like, it was effortless. I didn't have to work. I didn't have to stop and say, okay, can I be mindful? What am I going to say? was just present. And it was quite eye-opening to see just how natural it can be. So, you know, again, just keep practicing. Keep practicing. Maybe you'll stumble into somebody who is really mindful while they're speaking and get that gift like I did. You want to say something about working on the computer?
Just practice. Really practice. And don't have the idea that working on a computer blocks mindfulness, because those little ideas are very powerful. We have a view, you know, I can't be mindful when speaking, I can't be mindful when... It's actually not true. Mindfulness doesn't care what it's aware of. It doesn't care. It can be with the, you know, the energy of clicking the next website to keep, you know, it can be just noticing that. Oh, look at what the mind's doing. It's crazy mind right now, okay? Mind is totally crazy. You know? It's choosing to do this crazy, silly thing. Like, why do I need to see the same website that I love 20 times a day or 200 times a day? How many times we check the same place we tend to, you know, all the sites that we visit or the social media that we open? And but it doesn't need to change. The mindfulness can grow when we're willing to simply notice something about our experience. But we have to practice that, really have to practice. And it can be something very simple, just knowing the state of how you're feeling. You know, the agitation, the rushing, the energy of it. Or however it is, you know, can be calm sometimes, interest. So knowing something about that experience. And then we get better potentially at simply, even though we're looking at the screen, there's also still the sense of seeing. The seeing is happening. Even just the touching, you know, the touching of the screen, the touching of the keyboard. Anything at all becomes an anchor. Nothing blocks mindfulness. Really just practice and careful views, the view that I can't be aware.
The internet's a pretty potent mindfulness sink. I mean, it's basically a craving engine.
Craving engine, yes.
It's not a search engine.
And it's designed to dissipate the attention, to take it, you know, because in this screen you have access to more information than the world has ever gathered before in one. You don't even have to walk down aisles to, like, at least you're getting exercise, you know, in like Alexandria, the old library, that was where the storehouse of all knowledge was and burned down. You had at least probably go down into the stacks, wherever it was, and, you know, get exercise. Now it's just, what is the exercise we get? It's like, you know, it's like, you don't even have to do it that far. It's like, and we're accessing all of the world's knowledge by this little thing. We're just staring into the screen. Right? So, what was the point? I don't know.
Well, just that, I mean, the, I don't know. I think Google really has tapped into desire. Mm. You know, it's, what do I, I find myself sometimes sitting in front of the computer. What do I want to search for? You know, it's sad. can you wake up into that state of like, there's got to be something I want to know. If you can wake up to that mind state, you know, perhaps you will recognize the unsatisfying quality of it and put it down. But it's really potent. It's, you know, tapped right into that habit of mind to have a moment of getting what we want and getting a hit of pleasure from it. Right away, you get a hit of pleasure. It's like, oh, that felt good. Give me another one of those. You know, so it's really potent. And I do think that, yes, it's helpful to explore being mindful while we are on the computer, because we do have to use it for communication. And there are times when if you see yourself really caught, I mean, it's kind of like our strategies for here, you know, it's like if you find your mindfulness swamped by some pattern or activity, we say, not now. Put your attention on something else. Go out in nature. Open your eyes. Take another object. If you find that, you know, you are sitting in front of the computer and, you know, you get like half a split second of touching the screen and then an hour of being lost, maybe it's time to go out in nature. Mm-hmm. Put it down. Use the tools to help you kind of extract from
just
that.
Search nature.
Search away. At some point you'll notice the suffering of searching. At some point. So we should transition. Okay. Yeah, did you want to say something?
No, just there were a couple hands. And well, I always lean towards the hands, and Andrea's very clear about our boundaries, which is we need both of these. Which one is winning?
I think we need to.
Time is, yeah.
Yeah.
We have time tomorrow also to go.
Yeah, remember your questions for tomorrow. So, you know, I just wanted to say a few words of appreciation about IRC because it's really, you know, I have to admit, when we started this place, and Gil had this vision of a completely Dana-based center, I was willing to go along for the ride, but I was very skeptical. I did not think it would work. I didn't think we would be able to run retreats without having staff, and we had hours of meetings to try to figure out how do we do this, and you know, what about somebody to stay on site? Well, maybe one person. You know, maybe we need one person to live on the property to take mail or something. You know. And now, I mean, just the way it's evolved and the support of the community and of this the resident volunteers. We have 8 resident volunteers. We have many super volunteers who take care of ordering and registration. In this room, let's see, in this room we have Faith was our registrar. I think, Meryl, you do some ordering and inventory. Not anymore. Well, you did. Carol volunteers in the kitchen. Chris created all the systems to make the kitchen work, along with support from Michelle. Who am I missing? Where are the residents in here? Any residents in here? Oh. Judith is out in the hall. You know, the residents take care of the gardening, the housekeeping, a lot of the supplies and ordering, and you know, taking care of the maintenance. They've replaced the deck almost all the way around the building. So there's just so much that happens here that is offered freely with the support of the community. And so it is it's an amazing thing. I mean, we're 3 years into it, and it's working. It's working. And then Ines, of course, Ines. I can't have to mention Ines. We have our the basically everywhere you look here, you see Ines's mind. The systems, the orderliness, the beauty is so much her creation, and all done as a volunteer. So this place really exists primarily because of the volunteers that serve this community. And it's such a joy to be a participant in this, and inspired by the generosity and the giving that supports this community. So, you know, that's always a way to, you know, participate here, to volunteer. And we put on retreats together as a group, as a community. So thank you to IRC for providing the space and to Gil for providing the vision. I just bow to his holding to that vision. I think everybody he talked to said, it's not going to work. And here we are, as he sometimes says, we're sitting in what wasn't supposed to work. And it's working. So Cheryl, would you like come up and say some things about the logistics?